Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
I don't know what music I'm playing. I think that's the presidential theme, but I would like to induct you, Brooke Solomon, into the bisexual hall of fame. There is an animatronic figure of you. You look stunning.
Thank you.
What outfit are you wearing? Oh my
Shouldn't
God.
Shouldn't it be an animatronic figure of both of us? Because I assume the podcast is our most notable accomplishment in the future.
They burned mine by accident.
No!
It caught on fire and they were like, we can't actually induct you. I'm so sorry.
I mean, those animatronics are creepy.
Look.
Well, I mean, you love animatronics.
Look.
You're a fan of the...
I'm a fan of Disney.
The kitsch.
The kitsch,
as
yes.
it were.
When I saw this... this movie, look, no matter... I'm stepping outside of discourse. I'm stepping outside of the film itself. This movie did not only give me an entire sequence set on Cape Cod.
Yes.
Actually shot on Cape Cod.
Oh, yeah. Provincetown, baby.
It gave me animatronic nonsense like you would see in Disney about bisexuals. Like, it has some things going for it, Brooke.
Yeah, no. I like this movie.
I like this movie, too. Oh, my God. Everyone just left.
I think that you...
Our numbers just ran away.
I do think you like this movie more than I do. I also don't think that people hate this movie. I think people are more confused and or maybe a little annoyed and or maybe a little worried
on Disney Plus.
Okay, I'm just gonna pretend that didn't happen. About like the non content of the movie,
the overall repercussions,
stuff like that. But like, this played like gangbusters at TIFF.
Where did you see it?
In a theater.
Oh, really?
I saw it at the Grove.
Okay,
AMC.
There we go.
Where did you
Was
see
it packed?
It?
Was it busy? Did you have
a
good crowd?
Here's the thing.
Was it packed?
I saw this last night.
Ooh.
Which, for full transparency, was 9:45 p.m.
Oh my God, are you serious?
On a Monday. So no, it was not packed.
That might
there
be...
was like 10 people in the theater.
Brooke, I haven't been to a movie that late since the 12 a.m. screening of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
I had a 7:15 p.m. dinner. What do you want me to do?
Well, how was your dinner? Was it great?
Woman. It was a great dinner,
Oh
actually.
My God. Was it also at the Grove?
Or no? It was at Bakari, which is like a block away from the Grove.
Very nice.
Everyone that doesn't live in L.A. is like, what the fuck?
What is going on?
These people
do you want to know where
about?
I saw it?
Where did you see it?
I saw it about an hour outside of St. Louis
in
a small town in Missouri. Because I was in Missouri this past weekend, and I was like, for one, oh no, I don't know what the vibes here were, but it was a pretty full crowd, and let me just say, the jokes that I was laughing at were a little different than the ones other people were laughing at.
There were so, of course, now I'm like, I can't remember any of them, but there were so many jokes where I laughed out loud because I couldn't stop myself, and I was the only one in the theater, and I was like, oops.
Cringe, no, not me.
No, but the thing is that, okay, hi.
No, keep it going.
Hi, I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
We love talking about movies.
Bros.
We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer movies / queer cinema, whatever. Today, we're talking about the 2022 brand new
box
movie.
Office smash.
Bros.
Bro. Would
Bros,
you like to be
baby.
My bro?
I would not. I think that I am already your bro, but I would
That's
not
fair.
Like to be... Here, listen, I have so many thoughts. I have so many thoughts about this movie.
Okay.
First of all, I think this movie is good.
I agree.
Secondly, I think that there are many issues with how this film was
marketed
and presented, and one of them is the title. I think that the title makes sense in the context of the movie.
The film, agreed.
But when I was like, before I knew what this movie was about, I was like, why is it called that?
Mm.
It doesn't really make sense. And it's more like it's part of a subplot of the movie than actually about like
the integral sort of
part.
Yeah.
And listen, rom-coms are famously hard to name and also, you know, famously hard to get the names that
every Nancy Meyers movie
in
ever
your memory.
Yeah.
But
I mean, this could have been It's Complicated. Something's got to give.
Something always something's has
got to give.
The fact that they called a movie It's Complicated, and literally you could describe every single rom-com as It's Complicated.
Yeah.
But I hate titles that are phrases, unless it's a really good phrase.
What's your favorite phrase film?
I don't know. What's your favorite phrase film? I don't know.
Let me crack my knuckles and pull up this list.
There's probably a list of it somewhere, but like it has to be memorable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
It's okay. It's fine.
Are you pulling it up? But I think that. I get like the in joke of naming a gay romantic comedy bros, as in like, oh, they're just bros. Oh, they're just very good friends. But that doesn't actually like relate to the content of the movie. And I think it's confusing SEO wise. Mm. And I also think that it just like doesn't, it's not like buzzy.
I think what you're bringing up is, I think, some part of like what's emblematic about the movie, and that like on one hand I think that the marketing is great because you have two guys holding each other's butts, and like we have to stand that, and like to then be in where I was in like a very small town where politics may have been questionable, and in other places around the country where maybe that wasn't a common thing, that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, it lacks, which I've seen going around, sort of a star power that might have driven this movie to more box office financial success. Not to say Billy Eichner isn't a star, but I don't think Billy Eichner is necessarily a star. And that's not an insulting thing. And I don't think you need a star to drive a rom-com. But for this movie, for what they were trying to go for versus what they were marketing and everything, I think it's all inherently tied up in a big web. And I think it's a web that we will unpack.
We have to unpack. This is... You know, if it's not already obvious, this is basically like a movie that was made for our podcast, yeah. Both in terms of the reception and how it came out, but also in terms of the actual content of the movie. It's like, it's kind of amazing.
It's
not
like
to be like
movie,
we're
yeah.
the center of the universe.
No, we are.
But we are, of course.
As like in this movie, bisexuals, it all revolves around us.
Yes. Nobody has acknowledged it.
I wished you happy Bisexual Awareness Week.
Yeah, you did. I'm sorry.
I see you. I hear you. I'm listening. I'm
holding
learning.
Space for you. The thing is that there was a lot of kind of like basic jokes in this, but they were delivered extremely
worked.
Well. And you know, this is like maybe one of the only, I don't know, this is, we're going to talk about so much surrounding the marketing, but there were so many jokes that I thought worked way fucking better in the movie than they did in the trailer.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Which is kind of wild.
Because trailer ones usually work
better.
Yes.
But I think like, let's return to kind of like the poster and
yes.
the marketing.
Bringing it back, yeah.
And I think we should lay out some context.
I agree.
Forks and knives.
They're out. Spoons, maybe?
Yes, maybe.
We'll have some dessert later.
Sure, that sounds good.
I did find, it was hard to find phrases or things that were movies, but I did find movie titles that are full sentences.
Okay.
And some of these are fucking incredible. Where you have Boys Will Be Boys in 1935,
yes.
An absolute perfect thing.
I
but
mean, It's Complicated as a full sentence.
That's true.
Something's Gotta Give is a full sentence.
Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean.
Oh,
Jimmy Dean.
What a great movie title.
Mm-hmm. Dead Men Are Dangerous.
Whatever great. Happened to Baby Jane?
Have you heard of 1950s I Married a Woman? I feel like that's a movie we probably could cover.
Why? I need to know more. About why it's called that.
There's also I Married a Communist.
The sequel.
And then in 1951, I Was a Communist for the FBI.
Wow, we got a smash hit trilogy on our hands there.
Yeah, the I_trilogy.
That's The Americans.
anyways.
Film trilogy.
Yes, back to you.
Yes. So, I guess it's not really a full
sentence. Oh my God.
Did you find another one?
No, the log line for I Married a Woman. An ad man working on a beer account neglects his pregnant beauty queen wife. That's it.
What? That tells me nothing.
We know nothing about what
is this kind
movie?
Of like I married a woman, but I wish that I hadn't because
probably.
I'm so interested
John
in
Wayne
beer?
Cameos.
Okay.
Great. Love it.
Fascinating stuff.
Adding it to our list.
I was
going to
say, it's not technically a full sentence, but a movie that I can't believe I'm going to voluntarily bring up in relation to this film. But you know which which film title could be construed as a full sentence.
Sure.
Love, comma, Simon.
I actually, you know what, Brooke? I am glad you brought up that movie because that is going to be something that I think we have to go back and talk about.
I don't want to compare and contrast the two of them too directly because I think that there's a lot of differences. And I think it is, you know, sort of a bad faith argument to be like, well, the other gay theatrical movie did this.
And then I also think the same for Fire Island where everyone's being like, oh, Fire Island was this earlier. I'm like, it's... These things are different. They are different movies going for different things.
Yes. And also we can have multiple. And I think that like this is a good track though, because the more that we like pile up in this like very modern kind of like streaming and theatrical landscape, the less that we will have to compare them against like
each other,
either the juggernaut or just each other. As much as I was trying not to do that, I will say when I walked out of Bros and I was thinking about it, one of my first thoughts was I think I liked Fire Island better. Not that I meant to do that, but I did find myself linking them together in my mind, which
I mean they did come across in similar proximity to each other. Yes. So like inherently you're going to be like, oh, the two gay rom-coms versus
gay rom-coms.
In a year where there have been other rom-coms, just because inherently we don't get many gay rom-coms. So then when we get one, and you inherently are like, oh
yes, like the two adult gay male rom-coms with like elements of sex
and Yang in both.
Yes, of course. Bo and Yang should just be required to appear in every gay rom-com, in my opinion.
I love that.
He should be the Meg Ryan of the gay rom-com world
that we're having right now. Yes.
Or the Diane Keaton.
I love it. He shows up all in white.
Yes,
beautiful white
scarves. Mean, I would watch it. He is so funny every single time.
Yes.
He's so good. Going back to, because I think we really need to pick every element apart. That's what we're here to do. Going back to like the poster and kind of like the title and the tagline and all of that stuff, I think that a lot of what this movie was obviously marketed on was being the first, like, what is it? The first
rom-com by a major studio to star and be co-written by an openly gay man with an all LGBTQIA plus cast.
Great.
In quotes. I wrote it down.
A little bit of a mouthful.
Oh, really? Is it hard to say that?
But like, honestly, trailer and press tour aside, I think that the marketing team is building that the tagline and the poster and everything around that fact.
Yes.
So you don't actually know anything about the movie.
Yes. I think what you're nailing here is also part of the reason, it's part and parcel why I think it didn't do well, is because with Bridesmaids or whatever, it was a movie that was marketed as like, look at all this comedy, and also cool, look, it's like a bunch of women. Or Fire Island even was like, look at this comedy with a bunch of like fun gays. But this movie is very much like, this is the first. This is capital I important. And like the movie itself, while I think dealing with that, and actually I think the movie is in conversation with the fact that it's doing it.
Absolutely.
Whereas the marketing is so built upon that, but like people don't go out to see a movie because it's important. People go out to see a movie because they want to see a movie.
Oh yes. We will be talking in depth about this because this is like one of the things that's fascinating to me about queer stories actually getting the mainstream treatment, and like how much we talk about kind of like the sneakiness that happens, and when you take the sneakiness away, how kind of like the business side of promoting your movie like changes that. So I think that that's really interesting, because in my opinion, like, it's not just that this movie was being marketed as important as opposed to strictly entertaining, but I also don't think it's high concept enough, or the marketing did not lean into the more high concept elements of the script. And like, to me, that feels like a big mistake in terms of actually getting butts in seats. Because you look at things like Ticket to Paradise or I'm sorry, the Shotgun Wedding trailer that
I
was released
seen it.
Today. Oh my God, Jordan.
Is that an Endeavor movie?
No. Oh.
I was about to say, look at us. We both have two things going.
No. It is a Jennifer Lopez, Josh Duhamel.
Right. Wow. Her coming out with Marry Me and that in the same year.
Dude, I cannot believe you haven't watched the trailer yet. It's the most you movie that I have like ever seen.
Oh God. Okay.
Yeah.
I will watch it instantly.
It's awesome. But you have that. What was the one? Oh, even things like The Lost City or Marry Me. Like, I think that we all have sort of agreed at this point that the rom-com is kind of dying, and people are now trying to fight back against that, and kind of like coming, like Star is coming out and being like, no, I'll do a rom-com, like, please God, like, I will do it. And I think that, like, how that's evolved is they've become much more high concept, or they have this element of like spectacle to them, or genre blending,
or something
high concept.
I think the state of the rom-com is something, because it's like you look at sort of the evolution of it and whether or not the movies are in conversation with that. So like you have They Came Together, which is one of my all-time fucking favorite rom-coms, because it's basically lampooning and satirizing it, but so smart.
Yes.
You have Trainwreck, Fire Island, Sleeping with Other People, Plus One, but it's like most of these have all been
Plus One is so small.
Well, that's
too.
The thing is, yeah. So many of them have been relegated to streaming, like I Want You Back, which came out earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And so like our brains, especially if you look at TV, where a lot of rom-coms are now living, are so used to seeing rom-coms and rom-com similar things in the small screen in the comfort of our own home. So figuring out now what is the rom-com in the theatrical experience, is that a thing? And I think, like, as you were saying with Ticket to Paradise, it is like a star driven thing, and people like to see stars in big rom-coms, which is why, while it hasn't opened yet, but like in the UK it's playing so well, because people are like, oh, it's George and Julia, I like these two big movie stars. Even like the clip that was going around of them when they did their Vanity Fair thing from however long ago, people are obsessed because we are so deprived of star power, and so much of what made the rom-com such a powerful success back in the day was the power of the stars in it. Even if you look back to fucking comedies from like the 1920s, 30s forward, is like so much of screwball comedies is driven by like the personalities behind it. Like Bringing a Baby is like such a great vehicle because you have Cary Grant giving such a full body performance, etc. And so when we don't have the stars that we used to, and we're so used to everything being on the small screen, how do you make a rom-com for a modern theatrical age? And like this movie is trying to be like, okay, we're being progressive with our rom-com, which is also important and we love to see it, but also our audience is trained and ready for something like that.
And I think the secret to doing rom-coms right now is it can't just be a rom-com, which is obviously kind of annoying because there's nothing wrong with a pure rom-com, right? But if your movie is a pure rom-com, it's probably going to get relegated to streaming, with very few exceptions. And I think that, like, also looking at how much actual stars have changed, where you don't necessarily have the same on-screen chemistry, you don't have people like itching to do rom-coms unless they're people like Jennifer Lopez and
fucking
Clooney
Sandy.
And Robert and Sandra Bullock, who have like already done this before, who are I guess I'll fucking do it myself.
Right. This
people.
Is a bone I like to pick.
Like all of the young people rom-coms are straight to streaming.
Yeah.
And there are no really, really huge stars that are doing rom-coms that would allow them to open in theaters. So I think that you get the more high concept stuff. I think like Crazy Rich Asians was the most recent like bona fide, like huge, huge, huge rom-com box office hit. And that is obviously huge for like the community that it was portraying, but also that's a high concept movie.
Yeah.
That's a movie that's giving you scope,
spectacle,
and like wish fulfillment. Like,
would you say that Love, Simon is a rom-com? Because like stepping back, it does have rom-com elements, but it feels way more YA, teen comedy. It's like it's putting the com and the drom before the rom.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, because I mean he gets to kiss a boy
once.
At the very end of the movie.
One
it's not
smooch.
About him really falling in love. I mean it is because he has the letters, but
right. But like, emails.
I think that. So I was looking at it on the-numbers.com, and it's not listed as a rom com. And when you can look at like kind of like all the different breakdowns for ranks, which we love to do because we're giant fucking nerds. There's nothing for rom com, but there is for bros. And then I'm like looking at like a bunch of other stuff. I think Love, Simon is helped a lot by the fact that it like was actually one of like, if not the first studio released gay rom-com, in that like obviously it wasn't very gay behind the camera. Well, Berlanti, but like the actual subject matter.
Yes.
So you have that going for it. It's a YA movie. It's a teen movie. It's probably less expensive to produce.
It's also way more, and I was talking with a coworker about this today, and what they thought was that it's way more easy for straight audiences to buy into. And I don't think that I think that Trey Dantes would be fine with some things, but I think like Love, Simon is so vanilla and down the middle that like anyone can kind of watch it and not really care. You know what I mean?
Which is obviously like, I think an issue, but I think that I don't want to blame the marketing team for Bros for everything, but I think that the marketing team made it more of an issue than it should have been, because like, I think it's great that this movie is sexy and adult and R-rated.
It's
really
like, that's
sexy.
The fact in its portrayal of elements of the community, I really love.
Me too.
And like the foursome scene, I think is hilarious.
Amazing.
How they use Grindr, all of these things, I think work so well in this movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is what's I think so fascinating about this movie. It's a lot of like on one hand, do you know what I mean? Like you can sort of like both sides it. Being very bisexual about it, but like even like when people are like, oh, this movie's taking aims in shots at Schitt's Creek, Queer Eye, all the Hallmark movies, and it's like saying that it's doing it in a very cynical way, but at the same time I don't necessarily think that. Like I think that it is giving,
I thought it was really funny,
some like right, and like I think the way because it is doing the Hallmark tropes, and so it's almost like lovingly like making fun of it while also like hiring Luke to then kind of do the same tropes. Right.
It's also like this is a classic person who's cynical about love finds himself
finding
in a
love
comp.
Right.
Like, it's you can look at like the extreme end of something like Isn't It Romantic, or like just kind of the average, oh, I'm a little curmudgeon-y.
Right.
Like, They do it in it's countless movies.
It's everything. Yes.
I think it is very unfair to say that this movie is particularly cynical just because it is taking shots at popular gay stuff when you should obviously take shots at popular gay stuff.
And I mean, like, I think
course.
The shots that it's taking are like potent, and like what it says about Brokeback and like Power of the Dog. Like, yeah, it is like more straight audiences and more general audiences are used and trained to seeing queer trauma films. Same goes with like the black community and like slavery movies. Like white people will give so many Academy Award nominations for it, but then if you have like a normal film, people are like, I don't know about this. You know what I mean? It is a thing.
It's a thing. And I think that in my sort of like, it was very difficult to formulate my opinion on Bros because I was like, I liked it, but I feel like it's deeper than that. And I like was trying to figure out like what exactly I did like and what exactly like bumped with me and stuff like that. Just to be clear, I like this movie a lot, but I didn't love it.
I feel like I think we're in the same boat because I have walked out. I walked out, I guess, on a very big high.
Yeah, you loved it.
I simmer down.
You liked it
I liked it a lot.
At the time.
At the time.
Have you cooled on it a little bit?
I've cooled on it.
Okay. That's fine. That's how we watch movies.
And I think it's just because like I walked out because I was so nervous and all the discourse had been so overwhelming and just annoying.
Oh, but then it didn't go away.
It got worse.
Yeah.
But then I walked out and I was like, oh, this actually did exceed my expectations because I think I set the bar pretty low for what it needed to do. And so when it went above that, I was pretty happy.
Yeah.
But then the more I sort of sat with it. So like for an example, like I love the tertiary characters in this. Pretty much like everyone other than Billy and Luke are like people of color, trans actors, or some element of the community.
Literally an entirely LGBTQ+ cast,
except
and Deborah Messing
and
which,
Kristen Chenoweth.
Oh, and also Kristen Chenoweth is there wearing a hat in the shape of the Stonewall Inn that rotates.
Yes. Great.
Incredible.
Good bit.
Absolutely amazing. Oh, and there's all those like celebrity cameos at the end, but that's
fine.
All of the
jump
actual
scare
actors.
Yeah.
The jump scare Amy Schumer.
Yep.
Jump scarer Ben Stiller. Not really.
Ben Stiller
jump scare.
As
like, Ben.
Mr. Night Manager himself.
The Night Manager?
Or no.
Night at the Museum?
Oh my God. Imagine the Night Manager but with Ben Stiller.
Yeah, no. Okay, so what were you saying about the tertiary characters?
No, but so like I loved them and I really liked a lot of the comedy that came from their bits and everything.
Yeah.
Like, but then you step back and I was like, oh, it would have been nice if we got like half an ounce of like character development or depth to them.
It didn't feel
okay. Well, never mind then.
No,
you know
I think
mean?
That's
bad.
But think
like
that's
I wanted
valid.
To see sort of more of the world because like while Billy was commenting that he is centering himself as like the cis white gay male, I was like, but then also having it, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, you recognize it, take like a quarter of a step more just to kind of give a little bit more depth to it, but also by recognizing it, I think that is saying something, you know what I mean? Like he does see that, oh, I'm centering myself as this, but also most likely you couldn't get funding for a film if it wasn't him or someone like him.
Yes. But I think that my my hot take of the episode is that I don't think it's a problem to center certain aspects of the queer community in a movie because it pushes the market, hopefully, to create a larger variety.
Yes.
And you don't have to feel like you're putting everything but the kitchen sink into this one movie because it's the only chance that you're going to get. So that's
where I think it falters a bit.
Yeah.
Don't you feel like at times it's trying to do so much, and by trying to do so, like when it's trying to talk about so much of the history of the queer community and it's like having the Spike Lee style like photo montage, it's like, look at this, is all the queer history, and it's like all of these queer characters and all of, like, when that first dinner scene, I really thought about it, where like you meet all of his friends, okay, this is like a poly couple who's bringing in like a third.
Yeah.
They're like a surrogate family. Yeah. It's checkmarking like every element of the queer community.
So you feel like maybe it should have checkmarked less elements and done more character development with a select few.
Yes.
I think that is a very good call. Wow.
I mean,
studio note. Excellent.
But I think that, I think that thing where I think this movie probably had the fear and the burden, maybe self-imposed, of wanting to be the capital first movie to do certain things, and like it's important, and by trying to do that you have to want to encompass so much of the queer community rather than just focusing on like an element. Yep. But then within the queer community, so many people get upset even if you either A, don't do enough, or B, do one thing but you don't encompass enough, so you're sort of fucked either way.
Yeah. And I think that like you shouldn't have to worry about it.
You just make
like,
your art.
Yeah, you know, it's like you don't want that extra self-imposed pressure.
Right.
And the reason that I think one of the many reasons that we actually need like a large variety of like queer rom-coms in this space is so that we don't feel like there's this pressure to have to, again, include everything because it's your one chance. I will say, I think that the history aspect bumped a lot less for me. One, because I'm a loser, and two, because I think that they did a really smart thing with making him a queer history nerd who works in a museum.
Yeah.
And those were like the museum subplot was my favorite part of this movie. I think that the part that I didn't love as much was I think that he and Luke McFarlane have very good chemistry, but I didn't love the kind of like, I'm not your type, I don't like commitment, that sort of stuff. I get that they were like looking at a lot of like common thoughts and like tropes,
internalized
and
homophobia,
stuff like
et cetera.
Yeah, of course. And like not wanting to commit, and that's super common. Like I got all of that, but it wasn't really connecting.
It hitting as much
for me.
Did you feel that maybe there wasn't enough rom in the com that you were in this rom-com that you were sort of like Jackson, a past guest of the
Jackson
pod.
Jackson McHenry.
Yes. Had a great article
wonderful Jackson
where
McHenry.
He talked about sort of how the romance in it wasn't as present.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is something that I definitely felt in retrospect, and like stepping back and being like, there were a lot of also interesting ideas brought up within it, like about the testosterone, like about voices, what people want, what do you see in a person, what is attracted to you, but then kind of don't follow through,
like,
and
you
they
said,
kind of disappear.
Kind of everything about the kitchen sink.
Exactly.
And I get it. Like, I completely get it. And Fire Island has elements of that, too.
Oh, my God. Fire Island's so good at how it digs into class and race and masculinity.
And, but also, like, you know, Joel Kim Booster being, like, super fit, and Bowen Yang being like, listen, dude, like, this is a problem.
Right.
Like, it's dealing with similar things. I think that basically this is an extremely, extremely well-written screenplay where the elements around it don't necessarily live up to the screenplay.
Yeah.
I would nominate this for best original screenplay in a heartbeat. I think it is so fucking funny. So funny. I have not laughed this much at a movie.
In a studio comedy?
In I do not know how long.
You famously don't like comedies.
Famously, I kind of have an issue with comedy. It is so funny. I think I more have an issue with comedy movies because they're rarely as funny, in my opinion, as TV.
Interesting, yeah.
Like, I've been watching Abbott Elementary week to week, laughing my ass off. That show's hilarious. But I think, I don't know, maybe I'm just so sick of Judd Apatow movies, which I have never liked. And I don't think that comedy, I don't think that improv comedy
works
in a film context, and even like Bridesmaids, which is obviously the best example of the genre. Obviously, there are some great sequences, but like,
are you saying it could drag a little at times?
It drags so fucking much, and as soon as I get the joke, I want to be on to the next joke.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of alts. I'm not a fan of drawing the joke out. Get in, get out.
Yes,
make me like not want to laugh too much because I'm gonna miss the next joke.
Yeah. No, I think you sort of feel that in this, where it does feel a bit long, and
they could lose 15 minutes, no problem. But I will say the jokes
do
move.
Work. Yeah,
the jokes move.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, I think the jokes also move the most with the queer history museum.
Oh my god,
parts.
Yes,
and like Dot Marie
That's
Jones
the best
is
part
maybe
of the movie.
My MVP in this.
I would agree with
my
you.
Arm wrestling world champion when she is just like yelling about the lesbians when the lesbians have to hold him down.
Yes,
he's like disperse lesbians and everything. Like A+, amazing, great job.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I love it. It's it is really, really fucking funny. And you know, I Nick Stoller, who co-wrote and directed this, is like great. He did Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Good movie.
Get Him to the Greek, of course. The 5-year engagement,
seen.
Neighbors Two. Like he
Neighbors Two.
He
gay.
Has the chops. Neighbors Two. Did you say Neighbors Two? Good movie.
Gay.
Oh,
also not bad.
Oh yes, Neighbors Two is.
It's gay.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And pretty gay.
It's not bad. Yeah.
I, for a moment there in my mind, I confused it with Grown Ups 2. And I was like, I know you didn't just call Grown Ups 2 a positive movie on this podcast.
That's a really great movie that depicts the nuances of queer life on
Definitely.
Wherever they are.
Definitely. Stoller previously directed Eichner and Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising, which received praise for its depiction of a gay relationship and positive support from straight cis male friends, where many movies at the same time used gay panic for laughs.
It's basically
there
like
you go.
Zac Efron is very comforting of Dave Franco, I think, being in a gay relationship.
Oh, let's go Dave Franco.
I'm pretty
okay,
sure
King.
It's Dave, because I'm trying to recall, but I'm 99% sure it's Dave. And Zach's just like, come here, my brother. And he's upset because Dave was like his best friend, but now Dave's spending time with his boyfriend and he feels left out. You know, he doesn't know where to go. And so he goes to Seth Rogen to try to get close with his family, but
yes.
They're raising a kid. So then he goes to mentor Chloe Grace Moretz and the sorority girls and all hell breaks loose, etc. I watched this movie last year.
I was going to say, clearly I've never seen Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising, but maybe I should. Good for Dave Franco.
I know.
Okay.
Him and Alison Brie, love to see it.
We do love to see it. So I like Nick Stoller just fine. I don't think, basically what I'm going to say is I don't think this movie is poorly directed or poorly acted or any of that. I just think that the script is punching above its weight class and the rest of sort of like the elements of this movie feel like your classic studio rom-com, which I think that they should.
Yeah.
Remember when rom-coms were hilarious?
Yes.
That was great. But do you also remember when rom-coms were shot
short.
Artistically and had like really interesting costumes and dynamic lighting?
Nora.
Yes.
Albert Brooks.
And
yes.
Scenery
well,
that
was
wasn't just like sort of glossy and like New York, here
right.
it is, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Good point. It was interesting reading like the comps that he gave for this movie where he had like You've Got Mail, When Harry Met Sally, Broadcast News, and like obviously maybe three of my all-time favorite movies, all fucking perfect movies. But those movies, as we were saying already, are like auteur-driven, very clean. Fucking When Harry Met Sally is 90 minutes long.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like they are in and out. They get
They're
what they do. The
so
joke
clean.
Per minute ratio is so quick. Mm-hmm. And I think that this movie does suffer from trying to fit so much in it.
I don't remember whose review said this, so I apologize. It was one of the big trades like IndieWire or Variety or something. But someone mentioned how this movie was kind of like half Shaggy Apatow contemporary rom-com and half like 90s
yes.
Efron
yes.
rom-com. And I think that it should pick one, preferably the former, because I think that, no, the latter, preferably the Nora Ephron one.
Yes.
Because those types of movies, in my opinion, serve a strong screenplay. Apatow movies barely have a screenplay. And Billy Eichner is clearly an extremely talented writer and very funny and can deliver his own jokes and get people to deliver his jokes.
How do you feel about Billy?
With impeccable timing. I have always liked Billy Eichner. I've never been annoyed by him. I will say this press tour really testing my patience.
Yes.
But I've never found him like grating or anything like that. I think that hearing about his broadcast news comp, we both love broadcast news. Great film, masterpiece, perfect, no
sobbing.
Notes. I think my studio note for this movie is that it should have been at least marketed around the history museum and be more of a workplace rom-com. I'm not saying that Luke McFarlane needs to work at the museum or anything like that, but like, I think that this should be a movie about that.
Right.
Instead of about kind of like two guys met.
Right.
And then they fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not, it's just not that high concept. Yeah. And I really do think that, unfortunately, not to be like an annoying, cynical, like business person, but I think that that's a big issue.
Yeah. Do you think that in our current day landscape, I'm sorry to just be asking all these questions.
Oh, no, please.
Do you think that a gay rom-com is like a milestone? Like, do you think it's capital I important, like this movie sort of thinking? And I'm just going to reference another past guest, Sebastian, had a great thread where they talked about sort of this thing and like whether or not it's, whether the movie is important, but like whether or not, like what it's doing. And I think that that's sort of where I land, is like, I don't know whether or not it's like a milestone to have a gay rom-com at this point, but I do think that having more gay rom-coms or gay movies is important. Like, I think that what this movie is ultimately doing is important, and but I don't think that the marketing of that should be sort of the thing.
I think that's
where I'm frustrated by, and where so much of my frustration comes with people online and everything, is like, doesn't matter, like, the marketing and all they're saying is annoying, but like, it is, no matter what, good or bad, however you feel about the movie, ultimately it is like a net good what this movie is doing.
I don't think that there's like, the only net negative in my opinion is that it's not performing well financially.
Right, exactly.
Like, I don't think that this movie really has any negative, I don't think it's setting anything back at all.
Right.
Except maybe if it bombs. But that's not really the movie's fault per se. I think like what you just said sums up my thoughts very, very well. And that, in my opinion, this is a milestone.
Right.
However, I think that using the fact that it's a milestone as essentially the only thing that you pretend the movie has going for it is very weird and not conducive to making people want to go to the theater.
The movie, yeah.
I saw the trailer for this movie so many times.
Mm.
I didn't really love it. And then I saw the movie and I was like, this is so much funnier and livelier and like has more going on than the trailer would make it seem.
I agree. Yeah. It's way more nuanced than I think the trailer lets on, like, and what it's trying, even as, again, though, as we're saying, it's like a little stuff, but I do think that it is like talking more about these things than maybe necessarily like you would expect from the trailer. Like, it is digging into, I think, a lot of things within the queer community that are worth talking about and that aren't actually talked about that much, at least at a major studio level. And I think that's where, again, another frustration I have, sorry to be like this, but like so many people online, and I need to log off, but are like upset at this movie saying like the first X. But if you look at it as like a studio level, like there were obviously so many gay movies that have come before this. Like, and that's what's first where people are like,
that's the problem.
Exactly.
Is that you should not, basically, like, I've seen it summed up very succinctly online. And this is one time where I was actually like, you know what? I actually feel like this is a productive conversation to be having.
Here we go.
Of course, another finger on the monkey's paw curls.
Girl, but like, two fingers, girl.
As, you know, as sort of like exhausting as discourse can be. And let me just give everyone like a quick 30-second overview of what the actual discourse is.
Open the door to the queer museum.
Yes. So here's the thing. Bros is ostensibly, according to the marketing, a movie about two men falling in love. What the movie actually is kind of like one man's self-discovery while working at this very interesting queer history museum where he's trying to bring forward like past queer figures that were closeted or not spoken about into the light. And he's basically trying to figure out like his relationship with like being a modern gay man in relation to kind of like what people have done for him in the past.
Mm.
Now, I think that what happened is that the marketing around this movie was basically only like, this is groundbreaking.
Yes.
You should go see this. This is a capital I important film. And sort of what the discourse online, mostly on Twitter, from our perspective has been is basically people breaking it down, I think, like in a very smart way, saying if the only thing you can say about your movie is that it's important and not that it's fun or entertaining, that does not make people want to go see it. It feels like an eat your vegetables movie. And if similarly, your trailer doesn't really sell the life and like the buzz of this movie, it's just not going to engage people.
Right.
However, I'm sure that we've both seen Billy Eichner's thread that he tweeted.
Smart. Always tweet. Always tweet.
Definitely tweet on more. The weekend mm-hmm. that your baby is coming out in theaters.
Learn from Josh Trank. He took all the right lessons.
Definitely do that when you're mm-hmm. in a totally normal mm-hmm. and not at all not affected vulnerable state or of emotional mind. State.
No. Always tweet.
This thing that you have like essentially birthed and started right. and are the yep. only face of has just come out into the world.
Mm-hmm. That you weren't running down the street screaming at people to watch.
Billy Eichner basically tweeted this whole thread that was like, here's the bottom line, everyone. The movie didn't perform well this weekend, and it's because straight people did not show up. And everyone was like, first of all, get the fuck out of here. You don't know the demographics of people that showed up,
right.
except to your audience test screenings. Secondly, I'm gay, and I didn't go see this fucking movie because I didn't want to.
Yes.
Like, a lot of people are like, stop blaming straight people right, for right. the fact that your movie isn't doing well. Yes.
Between this and the Lena Dunham tour, queers are having a great weekend.
Lena Dunham claimed that she wanted her dead body sent through the New York Pride Parade. And everyone was like, we don't want you here.
You're not an ally. Get out.
Here's, like, name one thing that she has done for the queer community. Nothing. I'm so serious.
Lena Dunham's name one thing challenge.
Like, can you actually name in any way, shape, or form that she not, I like, the self-absorption is truly staggering.
There was a tweet I saw, and I'm sorry to not attribute it to someone, but it's like where at times Lena Dunham will have the most really well-written indictments of millennial narcissism,
yeah.
but then can't but then take the half step to recognize it on herself.
Millennial narcissism. Oh my God.
But no, to bring it back to Bros, I agree. And I think it is like, it's just because something's mainstream doesn't mean that it's important or groundbreaking, and I think that Billy somehow, like, the things got construed up there, maybe not for him, but whatever it may be, marketing yeah. and what have you,
yeah,
because like there is like a lot within this film that I would show like a parent or a friend. I would be like, this is really funny, you should go like watch this because of X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fucking History Museum is a fun, like, all of the elements there. I think that the entire first like meet cue sequence with Guy Branum and Luke McFarlane is so fun. Like, yeah. I love when he like keeps disappearing. He's like, what the yes. fuck, where did you go?
Yes,
that's funny.
Yes,
you know, it's so, like, there are a lot of humorous bits. I just wish that like they focused on that.
Yes. And I think that giving this movie something to anchor on other than the yeah. fact that it is a big studio gay rom-com and the first of its kind and totally groundbreaking would make people more interested in seeing the movie as a movie. What I like about this movie is that it feels like a movie, a real go to the cinema movie. I do think
is Harry Styles in the room with you right now?
That was a horrible Harry Styles impression. I didn't even attempt.
That was Harry Styles' accent. And don't worry, darling.
Honestly, it would make people interested in this movie as yeah. a piece of cinema and not just as like, oh fuck, I guess we have to go see that because if not, we're like not woke or whatever.
Right.
It feels like a really weird miscalculation, and I don't understand it. And it's not the first time that it's happened, but I think that it's obviously very top of mind right now because that was literally all they had going
right.
for the movie. And it makes it even more baffling because I think that the movie is really like rich in terms of what it could be pushing. And I think they should have pitched it as a movie about a guy who works to preserve queer history but can't figure out how he fits into queer history.
Yes.
That's because interesting.
Within that also, like, I think there was a really salient point within the movie that I was like, oh, this is really smart in what it's doing. Please dig into this. When he was talking to Luke McFarlane about how he's too old and basically like, this is coming off of like, we grew up with AIDS, I grew up with Glee.
Right.
And
great incredible line. Great.
But he talks about how when he was a kid, basically, like, he didn't have any of, like, the support. Everyone was, so, like, all of the homophobia, the vitriol towards him. And now that he's older, he's being passed up because he is a cis white gay male. Like, and I think that's fascinating,
so,
and would love to dig into like the nuances of how that affects the psyche within the queer community, and how like within the queer community there are so many different facets of like how people fit in, because it is such a sprawling community, and that's what makes it awesome and so fascinating. But the movie doesn't really dig into that, which is also a little bit frustrating. Like, I would argue a little more.
I agree with you in that it should be, I think, more targeted. It should be a more targeted movie overall. It puts a lot of stuff out there, like a lot of stuff out there, just kind of like as like a here you go.
Here's
and it
a line.
Does it does it very well.
Yes.
But yes, I agree with you in that it could stand to be more targeted. But I would argue Bobby, Billy Eichner's character's commitment to the Lincoln exhibit in
really good
the Gay History Museum, first of all,
good
incredible bit.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think that is like a perfect example of like how he feels like he's simultaneously ahead of the curve and behind the curve at the same time.
Yeah.
Because first of all, of course, I was primed to love that, because you have Jim Rash screaming, Lincoln was not gay! He was bisexual! Maybe!
A belligerent bisexual!
We love that. But I think that, like, that's a really good example where it's like, are you erasing Lincoln's bisexuality by claiming that he was gay? And it's like, but, like, is it better to claim that he was straight?
Right, right.
Like, and the idea that there's not enough proof to build an exhibit around the fact that he was gay, but you could technically build an exhibit around the fact that he was maybe
bi.
Yeah. And it's like, this is so interesting in that it's like, it is a win at the end of the day, but it's not a win for me. Like, it's not a win for Billy Eichner. And I think that like, that's a really good, like parallel, and it culminates in him like ripping a rainbow flag in half and like throwing this giant like Madame Tussauds style statue of Lincoln to the ground, which is amazing.
Delightful, yeah. A+. I would like this museum to exist.
I know.
I
really
want to go.
Wanted to
trauma
exist.
Coaster.
That's
trauma
the thing.
Coaster.
It's a museum with rides.
Reagan's face pops out at you.
and animatronics and actual like important queer history at the same time. And I like that, like Luke McFarlane's character helps develop like kind of like undepressing the museum, where he's like, this is kind of a bleak
fucking
museum.
It's a bad hang.
Like, after they had this whole conversation about being like, oh, well, straight people are only interested in going to go see traumatic movies about gay people like Brokeback. And then Luke McFarlane is like, this museum is depressing. This is a museum about how much like pain and suffering we've had to endure over the years. But it's about them, like both of them, trying to figure out how they fit into this like tapestry of queer history. I absolutely love it. But I think like, first of all, don't be afraid to lean into that, because I think that that is the strongest narrative choice that the movie has going for it. As you can tell, I'm really fucking hung up on this museum, mostly because I just wanted to exist and I'm mad that
I know
I
actually was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
But like, if you, Billy Eichner, are gonna tweet about how straight people didn't show up to your movie just because it has gay people in it, why wouldn't you just like go a step further and be like, well, if they're not gonna show up for the gay people in general, like, why should it matter if it's gay people and queer history at the same time? Mm-hmm. Like, why soften and vanillaize your marketing if, like, you don't think people are going to be there anyway?
Bro. Hey, bro, do you know any cool places to get some sick merch on the internet?
Well, bro, let me tell you.
No way, bro. What?
Well, listen, if we're actually going to lead into the actual intimacy and the subversion of the bros, I would just like to tell you about the most genuine and open shop on the internet, if you know, you catch my drift.
Yeah.
Superyaki.
Well, I did not see that coming,
bro.
Oh
my God, I know. Shocking. We know them. We love them. We would consider ourselves bros with them.
Oh, for sure.
At least it might be one-sided, but you know, I don't know.
Bro adjacent.
If you're looking for high quality merch of the cinema variety of truly any kind of clothing or accessory that you can imagine, shirts, hats, socks, pencils, mugs, huge fan of the mugs. They always have new stuff, and they are continuing to do really, really cool things, like putting on a screening of Twister at the Alamo Draft House.
I would like to twist my way to that.
Yes, and doing screenings of The Mummy across the country. They are constantly on it
They're on the move. They're on the go.
Yes.
They're changing the game.
They are changing the game. And, you know, you can help change the game alongside them. Because
oh, my God. That's very cool.
We have a little present for you. As our
bro discount.
Yes, yes. A special bro discount.
Bro count.
You can use code BROQQ. No, you can't.
Can
use code SUPERQQ at checkout at SuperYaki for 10% off your order. That's SUPERQQ, all caps. No spaces.
So radical, bro.
So if the bro spirit moves you and you really want to make this happen, you can find great merch and more at superyaki.com. That's SUPERYAKI.com.
Let's go, bros.
Keep being bros.
Well, I think also it's like it's sort of erasing, not to say it's erasing things that have come before, but there have been so many groundbreaking blockbuster movies that have come before. And yes, maybe they have focused on Trump, like Brokeback is just such an easy one to go to. But
I mean, it's
when Brokeback came out,
film.
That movie
it's
made
iconic.
$200 million
yeah.
in 2005.
Yeah.
And it's like people have seen and will see gay movies. Like gay movies have existed for forever. So yeah. It's not like it's like a groundbreaking thing. So to then be like straight people won't come out to see the movie, I think is just, as you were saying earlier, just like a waste of space to say that.
It doesn't.
Whereas like maybe either A, people didn't want to see this movie because of the marketing, or to see this movie or anything. You know what I mean? So it's like sometimes people just don't see things.
Yes.
And it's also maybe because it was Billy. Like what if there was someone saying like, what if Chris Evans was the Luke McFarlane? Yes, Chris Evans is straight. But if you had Chris Evans in that role, does that lend more weight? Does it add a half a dose of star power that maybe would have sold it more? You know what I mean?
Do you? I love the fact that you are casting up this movie with only
agreed
out
completely
queer
yes
actors. It's fucking awesome.
I love that. Yes.
And I'm sure that they weren't like, no disrespect to Luke McFarlane at all, but I can't.
Those thighs.
I can't imagine that he was the first choice.
Probably not. No.
Even though I think he's very good in this movie.
Yeah.
I just don't know that you're like, you know that guy from Brothers and Sisters and The Night Shift? I think he would be really good in this
real,
junior
real
rom-com. Even though I think he's very, very
I think
good.
I think he's shockingly good at the emotional stuff in this movie.
He's man is a TV actor. He knows how to cry on command.
Oh, those
come
eyes. Those eyes are watery 90% of this movie.
Beautiful eyes. Beautiful eyes and beautiful biceps. I was going to say about, I'm really hesitant to have this soundbite on mic because I would normally never admit this, but in this case straight people are not the problem.
Wow. I will be saving and using that forever.
Shocking. But no, I think that this movie is currently underperforming. I won't say that it's flopping. It's only been out for one weekend.
Right.
I think that this movie is underperforming because it did not look exciting.
Right.
It did not look that fun. I also have, having seen the movie, I have some quibbles with the trailer in particular, because first of all, we got that trailer pushed on us a lot because we live in LA and obviously we go see a lot of movies. But I was seeing people online that are like, I barely knew that this movie was coming out.
Really?
Which is interesting.
Fascinating.
I feel like I was like, oh my God, enough of this.
I know the
trailer
is coming out. Yeah.
But I think that the trailer, like I already said, it's not as funny as the movie, in my opinion. The amount that the trailer focuses on the like fighting in the boardroom stuff between all of like the basically the board of the Queer History Museum.
The queer flag, basically.
Yes. I think it in the trailer comes off as very grating and makes you feel like, are we about to just go see a movie that's a bunch of queer people
queers
like
fighting,
arguing with each other?
Like a mean gay trope.
Exactly. Like it feels not even necessarily like fun bitchy, but you're like, this is like kind of a lot. But the thing is, the argument scenes in the actual movie are hilarious.
Funny, yes.
And I think that like Billy Eichner's character in this movie is so interesting because he's pretty unlikable, but in a way that I really like.
That's
unlikable.
Kind of the Billy shtick. Like,
yes,
he's acidic and he's annoying, but like you do like him.
But you love him.
And like I rewatched a lot of Billy on the Street before this movie.
Billy on the Street is great.
And
I love Billy on the Street.
It's there are some really fucking funny bits in there.
Let's
like,
go lesbians. Here we go,
a
lesbians.
Classic, yes. And it's like you can either hate or love it. It's very clear, and I very much understand if you don't like it, but like his comedy works for me. At
for
times.
A dollar,
yeah.
Name a woman.
Name
any woman.
When he goes up to that poor girl on the street and she cannot name a woman and is struggling for like 45 seconds.
Yes.
It is so funny.
I also love the, who is the worst person who say it. I don't remember what he ends up yelling, but it's great. I think it's really funny, but I think that the trailer...
Would you have sex with John Hamm?
Yes. I mean, of course.
Imagine saying no.
Incorrect. I love... He did it with John Oliver, where he'd go...
Yes.
Are you gay? Do you know who John... Do you watch John Oliver?
Yes.
Who is John Oliver? Amazing. I think that the trailer for Bros does not sell Billy Eichner's unlikability in the movie.
Mm.
So those scenes, like, a lot of them rely on him being, like, just kind of an insane, neurotic person. Yeah, and everyone being like, you're killing the vibe right now! Right. Oh, my God!
Yes.
And but the trailer doesn't, like, tell you that that's, like, his character.
Right. Well, like, even the dinner scene with the mom and
oh
the family...
God. Oh my God, Jordan, I was watching through my hands. I was like, I might have to leave. I was, oh my God, there's nothing worse than an awkward dinner scene.
It's the best.
Especially in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. A singing theater restaurant in New York City.
The timing was so impeccable.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway, sorry, but what about that scene?
No, it's exact. It's
yes.
Like that is where his character's an asshole, and you're like, I love this because it's working, but it's working for your character. And
yes.
That's the whole point. Is like, he's insufferable, and Luke McFarlane is like the most lax gay you've maybe ever met.
Yes.
And that's why they're attracted to each other, and yes. They find like love in their differences and everything. But like, it works because Billy is annoying.
Yes.
Like, that's what's so great about the character.
Yes. Also, as someone who is dating a bi man who doesn't present as bi in, I would say, like, most of his interests, a la Garth Brooks. Not that I actually don't think Evan listens to Garth Brooks. But I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, I get it.
I see it. You're like, I see you, Billy.
I
hear
get
you.
It. We were in, Evan and I were, my lovely boyfriend Evan, were shopping in Trader Joe's one time, and Madonna was playing. We were in the West Hollywood Trader Joe's, I want to say. And I was bopping along, and Evan
as
was like, what is this? And I was like, it's Madonna. And some guy literally two aisles over was like, you don't know who Madonna is? And I was like, we got to go. We got to get out of here.
The weeo gays are descending.
So bad for Evan. He was mortified. He was like, I'm sorry that I don't know who Madonna is. How am I supposed to know that?
How are you supposed to know? The
what? Well, that's the thing, is that it's like, I think that it's very similar to Luke McFarlane's character, whose name is Aaron, for the record, whatever. His name is Luke McFarlane. His character in this, where you're like, you listen to Garth Brooks?
Right.
Are you like... kidding
when
me
he
right
sends
now?
Office gifts.
Yes, office gifts. And like, at one point he's like, my favorite gay character is from Friends.
Yeah. It's like Ross's ex-wife.
Yes, what is her name? I don't remember.
Oh my God,
don't you love that he's a baker though?
I do love
Luke
that
McFarlane's
no
secret.
No
he's
a chocolatier.
A chocolatier.
Hot.
I will say, I this is like maybe considered a slur, so I apologize. I'm just gonna use it in context. I was really expecting a fudge packer joke.
Mm.
And there was not one, which I was a little disappointed by, but whatever.
There was a lot of raunchy jokes though, which I was very excited about.
Raunchy jokes. Do you remember any standouts? You texted me like the day before I was seeing this, being like, can you
please
try to remember
well, that's the
as
thing.
Many quotes as you can? And the thing is that it's like, I feel like I can, but right now in the moment, I cannot. But
I
it's
know.
This.
Well, there's like the You've Got Mail grinder gag, which I think is very funny.
Yes.
Where they're like, oh,
Meg
this-
Ryan from You Got Mail would never send an
right.
ass pic.
Right. I mean,
blah,
the,
blah.
The foursome, I think, is a very funny.
It's great.
Where you come up and they're making out. Like, that's the thing. Is like, there's
yes.
so many bits. Home Alone with Sarah Paulson, a classic.
There's a running gag about the Hallmark Channel. It's called Hall Heart. Or something, making increasingly problematic gay movies. I think like
the poly one.
They have a bisexual one that's called Christmas with Either, which
yeah.
is really funny. And then they have a poly one called Have a Holly
Polly
Christmas, which is amazing.
Oh my guys, it's snowing on all of us.
On all of us.
There's like eight people.
Yes, there is like a running Queer Eye guy, which is really funny. The line where they are sort of shitting on Schitt's Creek, where Billy Eichner is like, straight people are too comfortable with like gay people. Thanks, Schitt's Creek. And someone's
right.
like, oh, that's who you remind me of, Eugene Levy. And he's
right.
like, God fucking damn it. I thought was great.
I think the name of his podcast is quite funny also, like the 11th brick being like he would have thrown the 11th brick at Stonewall.
Not the first, but not the 11th.
The 11th.
As we mentioned, Christian Chenoweth comes out at one point in a giant rainbow gown and a rotating like animatronic hat.
Love to see that.
The Stonewall in. Amazing.
I think Deborah Messing's also very good
in
this movie.
Deborah Messing, best supporting actor.
She
I am
bodies
dead
it.
Serious. She absolutely crushed this movie.
When she eviscerates him and is like, I am a straight woman. I am not here to hear all of your gay stories.
I am not my character. I'm going to shave my head. Hearing Deborah Messing, first of all, drop the F-bomb like every two lines, but like laying into Billy Eichner, I was
delightful.
Like, Deborah, I didn't know that you had it in you.
Yes.
I won an Emmy for it. she would be my MVP of this movie, even though she was only in one scene. But I would say my second MVP is also Dawn Marie Jones, Queen of Glee.
Yes.
Coach Beast herself.
Love to see it. We should shout out everyone else on the squad there.
Yes, we do stan Jim Rash. Mm-hmm. Director, writer, actor.
Love
Jim Rash,
it.
A multi-hyphenate king. Love him.
The belligerent bisexual.
I was like, is he bisexual?
IRL?
I thought he was gay, but then I couldn't find it on his Wikipedia, and I usually don't try to investigate further outside of the Wikipedia, because if it's not on there, you probably don't know. Anyway, that was interesting. Dot Marie Jones, Guy Branum, who we mentioned,
delightful. Is
not part of the museum squad, but is like Billy Eichner's best
like close
friend.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's so funny.
So funny.
So fucking funny. This movie is also, even though I think it's like 15 minutes too long, it's cut very well.
Yeah.
It is sharp. It is funny. The timing is
really well done.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I think as I said, I hate Apatow movies and I hate how long they like sit in
linger.
The fucking scenes when you're like, why didn't the scene end 5 minutes ago? This scene actually
Brooke is shriveling
cuts
up.
For comedy.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy. The only scene, I think, in I truly mean this, any Apatow movie that I actually think is funny with the length it goes on is between that like 15-year-old girl and Kristen Wiig in the jewelry shop.
Mm, yes, that's a really fucking good scene.
That ends with, you're a little cunt. That scene is...
That may be the best line delivery of her career.
Yes. That scene is so fucking funny.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. But that's, I shit you not, probably the only time where I was like, this is... actually great.
Yeah T.S. Madison, right,
also known as Maddie. She's cool. She became the first Black trans woman to star in an executive producer on a reality show with
delightful
the T.S. Madison
as
parents.
We said Bowen Harvey Fierstein.
It's
everyone's out there,
everybody. It's great. There's like, it's a pretty deep bench, and literally everyone is queer in one way or another. Even I think, like, I remember when this was first announced that Billy Eichner was doing this, he was like, everybody's gonna be queer, even the straight characters, which is
they
how
do.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amanda Bierce, who plays Luke McFarlane's mom, I like don't know. She's been publicly out as a lesbian since 1993. We love to see it.
We wrote the exact same things. In the
like,
OG
cool.
Fright Night, which we will be covering
at some
point. We will
cover eventually.
Yes.
And like basically the quote-unquote straight couple who were like too cool with the gay community but have like a couple of kids are like both played by queer actors.
Right.
So that's cool.
What's his face from Scandal? I always forget his name. Guillermo Diaz?
Yes. And Monica Raymond, who's also like a TV actor.
I don't know if you know this, but I was so big into Scandal.
Really? I did not know that. So I have learned in the past couple of months that Jordan was very big into not only Scandal, as I literally learned in this moment, but also Glee, which in retrospect makes sense. But it's just like, you don't watch that much TV, so I didn't ever...
So when you get the TV, you're like, oh.
But also, it's not like not that you watch so little TV, but TV is so much less of a priority for you than film. That like,
yes.
I would never expect you to watch like seasons of Scandal out of everything.
Brooke, I watched so much Scandal.
That's crazy.
I know. I didn't finish
it,
though.
That was very fruity of you. I just have
to
say.
Oh, really? It was? No kidding.
I just have to tell you.
I was there for Olivia Pope
It's probably good that you didn't finish it, because I know it gets like really bad.
Does it really? Oh, that's
so
sad.
I have never watched an episode of Scandal in my life. You
what?
Know what I was deeply obsessed with, though? How to Get Away with Murder.
Okay, I
that
never
show
saw
was
an episode of that.
Everything to me. I mean, hey, you want to talk about cool fucking queer characters on television?
Is there a cool one in that?
Okay, Viola Davis, in like season 3, they're like, surprised she has an ex-girlfriend. And then, like, because her husband is a dick. So, like,
shocking.
Eventually she and her ex-girlfriend, like, become, like, the main love story of her. It was crazy.
The fuck?
It was crazy. And there was a gay couple on that show, and it was, like, groundbreaking. And that it was talking about, like, living with, like, HIV, and also, like, had a lot of, like, really steamy gay PG-13 sex in
okay,
it.
Okay, Shonda.
Like, it was, like, a big deal.
This is... Oh, God. See, again, also, we've talked about this before, but it is so fascinating, the line between TV and film. I think this is where our podcast comes into play. And mm-hmm, like what I've been mm-hmm. thinking about with this movie is that mm-hmm. this movie, as we, I don't know, there's so much to talk about, but like.
Well, can I just point out before you do that
yes.
this cast is almost entirely
TV people,
TV That's actors.
Also what I was thinking too.
Yes, it's, there is.
Fucking crazy.
The sort of question about like bona fide movie stars. There is not one person, although I think they're all extremely talented, including, by the fucking way, Christian Chenoweth and Deborah Messing. There is not one actor in this movie that you could say is like
a movie star. Yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Nobody. Actually kind of insane. Yeah.
And
well,
like,
except for the cameos.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. And yeah. of that, it's Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
I guess Amy Schumer. I mean, Trainwreck opened really well.
Yeah.
But like,
but now,
that's it.
Do you think Amy could even open a big movie anymore?
Well, her latest thing was
show.
A TV show on
right.
Hulu.
Yeah.
So, which I think did
was
pretty well.
Was it Life After Beth?
Life After Beth.
I always see that and I think about the fucking
the
Aubrey Plaza
movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it Life and Beth? Oh, it's Life and Beth.
Life and Beth is the Amy Schumer one.
Life After Beth
is the Aubrey Plaza one because
yes,
she's like
a zombie.
Okay. So what were you going to say about
our podcast, yes. The Queer Quadrant, is a podcast that focuses on, you know, four quadrant
movies. We all
know
it. We all love it. We all listen to it.
I guess I do want to ask the question for you of like, how do you feel that this fits in to the podcast itself, and like, how do you think it succeeds? Do you think it fails? I don't know if this is like spoiling our Queer Quadrant stars or anything, but like, how do you feel about like this at large? Because this is, you know, a four quadrant movie that is gay. It has a gay character. It is about being gay, but it is also about the romance at the center. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how do you feel?
The thing is, this is interesting because in many ways, this is a groundbreaking film, and I haven't actually thought very much at all about my QQ rating, because usually what we go for
stressing about it
is that it's like basically what the QQ rating represents, because up until I guess this very moment it was so rare that we got something that was so outwardly gay that it's basically like it's an effort score,
right.
Essentially.
Yes.
It's not necessarily
how
about
hard did you try?
Yeah, like basically. And so this is a movie where we don't have to do any reaching at
right.
all. And obviously we've done movies where you don't have to do any reaching in the past, but so I think rarely have we done one that was at this level of like cultural conversation and relevance in like our time, like happening right now, that also like doesn't have anything else that is helping to bring in an audience. I think about like, I always go to Atomic Blonde just because like,
do you like that movie?
I did. Shockingly. Like, that's a movie where there's like two women kissing in every trailer.
Right.
And like, it's about a bisexual woman.
Yeah.
But it's not only
about
a bisexual woman.
Yes.
And I think that this movie is obviously about more than like being gay, but that's what it was pitched on. And that is like everything in the movie is revolving around like the central thing in Atomic Blonde is she's a spy. The central thing in Bros is not that he's a podcaster or that
he's
running a museum. It's that he's gay. Like, that is the thing. So I think that like, if I was going by how I usually rank things on the QQ, that would be a 5-star, but maybe like, I don't know, it feels like I want to evaluate it in a slightly different way, but
well,
I don't know if I'm gonna end up at the same place.
I think it's sort of the Love, Simon thing slash a
but also I feel like we could shit a lot more on Love, Simon because we were like, this is a movie made by straight people and Greg Berlanti,
right?
Like,
that's it. Yes. But no I think it's sort of a thing about like what like the portrayal of queer characters and all that thing, and I think like whether or not it's doing a stereotype where you're like ping-ponging and seeing like every aspect of the community or what have you, it is giving representation. And I think like, especially for like the gay male demographic, I think is like actually digging in and doing a lot into saying things that are nice to see. Like, obviously, we've seen a lot of things. Like, it's not like this is treading over new ground, but to be fueled by a major studio, it is refreshing to see. Like, I think about In-N-Out a lot. I really walked out of its movie because I was like, that is a movie that is very much like playing within the studio system, has a very straight cast, but is about gay, but it has like one...
About gay.
The longest kiss in gay movie history at that point from a major studio that was 12 seconds long.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? And this movie like has obviously way more than that.
Yeah.
And so
we should leap back to that, but finish.
Yeah, but no, but it is, I think I walked out more positive because I don't think the portrayal of queerness was bad or
not
anything.
Oh my God, not at all. I thought it was very good.
And like, that's, I think you had mentioned this where I don't think it's like regressive at all, which made me positive because I think like through a major studio system there is a fear that things have to be sugar-coated or what have you. I think in the case of this movie, that this movie maybe added too much frosting to the cake instead of kind of just right, you know what I mean, or under frosting it.
I think that this movie pulls about as many punches as any typical rom-com would.
Yes.
And it's nice that this is obviously not a movie about gay drama. It's great.
Yeah.
I think that it does not pull any punches as far as the depiction of gay people and like the gay lifestyle is concerned.
I saw some people say this and I definitely agree, where it almost feels like it's anticipating the gay and queer conversations that we would be having to try to circumvent it by being like, I see that you're going to think this thing. Let me like have a line of dialogue or like a plot beat to quickly like cut you off before like you can think that thing. And I think that but I think that also then fuels what we've been talking about a little bit, where it's like, well, maybe that like holds the movie back from being successful because you're so worried about what audience interpretation may be at times. I don't know. These are all questions and thoughts that I'm throwing out there because I guess it you know, it is hard. Movies like, I think, you know, art is shaggy and queerness is shaggy and like things are supposed to be messy. And I don't think that you're going to have a perfect movie that's so clearly encapsulates the entire queer experience. That's a fucking impossible task to burden yourself
by the way, you shouldn't.
Right. No, it's dumb to do that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's sort of like where I would see it at times, where you would be like, oh, well, I don't think you need to be doing this thing just to like try to like prevent yourself from having anybody be upset or like say some discourse back to you.
I feel like it was more I don't know, the way that I took some of those more like jokey lines was, we don't want to shy away from including aspects of the queer community that maybe people that are not queer won't understand, but that also are shied away from. Like, there's a lot of sex in this movie.
So much sex.
It's great. And like, there's like a moment of like Billy Eichner like doing poppers, which is great. But if I was to like take my random like, if I was to take my parents to see this movie, they'd be like, the fuck
is this?
Is poppers? Like
that scene cackling from basically from them wrestling on the like blanket, and the guys come over and they're like, oh, whoa, okay, hey.
Yeah.
And they go and he's basically just like, oh yeah, you fucking like that? You like, all funny, all works.
Also hot.
Bro, did you know that gay men have to wrestle in grass in order for them to then make out?
It was so funny because that's like such a pet peeve of mine. Every single gay script I read, it's like, and then we punch each other. I'm like, fucking enough. I get that you have anger issues, but this, I was like, that's hilarious.
It's like, slap me. You like that?
Hot. But like, I think that I like the inclusion of stuff like that, and not in like a, look, we did it, but using it for comedic effect, even if it does run the risk of being like, ha, you thought we wouldn't, but we got you.
Right.
I don't mind that. Because it does feel like, I think the problem with, our whole Love, Simon episode is about this, the problem with trying to make a queer movie too appealing to four quadrant audiences is you lose any of the nuance of the queer community, because technically straight people should not understand everything about the queer community, because you don't, you're not part of it. There's gonna be like stuff that you're cut out of, and they make like a meta joke about that in this movie. It's in the trailer, the bottom dance. Oh, gay sex was much more fun when straight people were afraid of it. I get that.
Yes.
Like, it's funny.
Right.
So I think that I liked that.
Yeah. And it's like, straight people will pick up on some things. Obviously, like, there are things in like for throughout history, like straight people get stuff, but there are also very intricate nuances that they might not get, like the lived experience.
Yes. And I think that that should be the case for a gay rom-com in particular. There should be jokes that, I don't know, we are laughing at that maybe other people aren't. Except for me, I was like, oh, my sense of humor is different than the other people in this theater. Oh, God. There was one where I was like cackling out loud. I don't remember what it was. It was some little throwaway line, and I laughed really loudly. I was the only person.
It was the throwaways that got me where I was laughing.
Yeah. I love throwaway lines. I love them. I think they are so much fun. I do know what my favorite joke is from the movie.
Ooh, yes.
But I was going to save it for the outro.
Okay, hold it then.
I'll hold it.
Wow. You're really blue balling the audience here.
So there you go. I mean, hey, it's my queer duty. Basically, like, bottom line for me is I like this movie. I probably would watch it again, but more than anything, I want to read the script.
I would love to read the script.
I think that is kind of telling in that it's like, I like the writing of the movie more than I like the movie itself.
I mean, I also think, like, you know, audiences shouldn't, like, the entirety of the queer film experience shouldn't ride on Billy Eichner.
No, like, no, it should not.
I think that's an insane thing to think about. Like,
that's too much pressure.
That, like, queer history and queer filmmaking rides or dies on bros. Like, that's dumb. Like, there will be gay movies to come after this. This is not the last gay movie. Maybe like some studio execs would be like, oh, X movie didn't make money. Sure, you will for sure get that. But at the same time, there's going to be, like, there always have
been
queer movies.
Here's my thought. If there was enough pressure in society for Universal to develop Greenlight and produce this very gay movie, mostly just under societal pressure and a very good script, I think that there should be enough societal pressure for them to continue
make more?
Doing that.
I agree.
In my opinion. Like, to be able to cast this up with no star power at all and to, like, commit to a very wide theatrical release,
yeah,
like, that is significant.
I also think we just need maybe more gay stars. Like,
yeah, but also, like, I think it's kind of interesting that there is, like, not, because there's obviously a very, very small Venn diagram,
yes,
of people who
exactly
are gay who also
are out,
would, yes, who would be considered movie stars.
I agree, yes.
And most of them are, like, a little more arty,
yes,
but, like, and I don't think
or
that
on TV.
I don't know what the casting process was like for this movie. If it was just like, let me cast the people that I know and I like, who I want to collaborate with, or if it was like, we need to take our quote unquote A-list shots
right
before we, like, go down the line.
It would be actually fascinating to know what I would love to know what the casting breakdown was.
Yeah. Me too. It's also very fascinating because I think that there's more queer women in Hollywood,
yes,
than there are out queer men. And this is a movie that is mostly about men, which I don't think is a problem at all. But maybe that is part of it.
Well, I think that's inherently built into the latent homophobia within America and society at large.
Yeah,
where
it is.
People are scared of men kissing and are not scared of women kissing.
Women kissing is hot. I think we talked about this when we talked about maybe Girl Interrupted and Angelina Jolie, or maybe it was on the In-N-Out. It was on the In-N-Out
probably
episode
In-N-Out,
when
yeah
we were talking about, like, there's so many less, like, out gay male actors. Like,
yep,
I could name, I feel like just off the top of my head, please forgive me for any, like, intense omissions. They're not intentional. But, like, the people off the top of my head that are, like, rom-com leading men that are also out and queer are, like, Neil Patrick Harris, Luke Evans, Lee Pace.
Ooh, oh my God. Brooke.
Maybe Murray Bartlett.
Imagine
Coleman Domingo.
Lee Pace in this.
I would kill to see Lee Pace in, first of all, a queer movie.
Him
but
and fucking Coleman
rom-com?
Domingo. My God, two tall kings.
I know. Luke
God
Evans too. Who am I for? Andrew Scott. Andrew Scott, obviously. So I think that it's like, but, like, they're not Chris Evans.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Who's, yeah, they aren't capital S stars.
Yeah. that's the thing. They're more like B tier,
right?
Which is fine.
And that's just
they're
also
great.
A problem that we have in Hollywood at large, and that like we're not cultivating the system of mid-budget 2-star power movies that we used to, where stars would be born in the mid-budget movie to then become stars.
Right.
There's not a path forward. It's either you do an indie and then you're in a Marvel movie and you're like famous, but you're not a star.
And there's also not a path for you to do rom-coms.
Right.
But like I feel like it would be a different conversation to go to like the people that are in this movie than it would be to go to those men, or even like if we're looking at like there's probably more out queer women because, you know, fucking society, to go to like Angelina Jolie or Tessa Thompson or Queen Susan Sarandon or people like that. And like I just feel like it's different in that everyone who's in this movie is very, not that those people aren't out and proud, obviously they are, but like these people, like I don't know how to put it, but do you see the
difference
you're
saying. Yes.
That I'm also putting out there? Yeah.
Also, I think it is saying something, not to say like to be ageist at all, and I'm
you
not
can
being
be,
ageist.
You can be a little ageist.
No, it's I just fine. Think that audiences, like Billy Eichner in the movie specifically talks about how he's 40 and like hasn't had a significant partner, doesn't have kids, isn't married, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's fascinating in talking about the like the queer experience and like how much older he is finding love later in life.
Yeah.
I think that's
it's possible.
Beautiful.
It's possible.
Right. But also I think audiences are more used to younger.
Luke McFarlane is like a young hottie though.
Right. So well that's what I mean. Like I mean the star thing, like you would think maybe younger people, but we also don't have younger stars, I guess.
And,
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. If you're too young of a star, you're not considered a box office draw, and you just get shunted to streaming unless you're literally Tom Holland and Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet and Florence Pugh. Like,
it's me, Tom Holland.
It's like,
rom-com.
There's such a small percentage of young people, as in, I would say, like, actors under 30 who can actually lead
a movie.
Studio box office. It's so bizarre.
I think it is.
It's like, so bizarre to me.
Granted, yes, Tom for Spidey. Outside of that, I don't even know though. Like Uncharted
Dude,
and
Uncharted
Cherry.
Uncharted fucking cleaned
it
the
did?
Fuck.
Okay, never mind.
Up. Cherry.
Everyone
a disaster.
Went to go to the Papa John's or wherever fucking pizza shop they had in that movie.
I'm literally in a Papa John's right now.
I cannot believe that movie.
So
it's
insane.
Actually not as bad as it should be.
We'll not be watching. Thank please and
saw
thank
it at
you.
An Alamo with past guest Sebastian.
Look at that. Great.
Delightful.
A good movie to watch at the Alamo.
It was a Brooke, you know my Alamo theory, where it's you see bad movies or really long movies at the Alamo.
Yes,
there's no in between.
You need the food to distract you and or get you through the actual
you
movie.
You need sustenance.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I have a Cracker Jack parallel to bring us home.
Ooh.
And talking about the future of kind of like this movie. So at the time of recording, Avatar is currently being re-released in theaters and IMAX. It is making a shit ton of money.
I am going to go see it.
And David Sims of The Atlantic wrote a very good article about how Hollywood took the wrong lessons from the Avatar boom and sort of like did not bother to really push CGI further along in terms of like awe-inspiring spectacle, and instead was like, oh, this just makes things faster and cheaper.
Yeah. That sucks.
And we can throw 3D on at the end instead of like thinking about 3D and stuff like that. And while I don't think Avatar is a perfect movie, and I do want to see it in the re-release because I haven't seen it in so long and I haven't seen it in a theater, so I feel like I like missed like a huge portion of what is exciting about it. That sort of like being able to look back at the retrospective of the past 10 years and say like these are the lessons that Hollywood took from this absolutely enormous blockbuster is really interesting to compare with, like, I feel like whenever a queer movie underperforms, there's a lot of hand-wringing about like, oh god, what does this mean for the future of queer cinema? Is it dead? And it's like, well, maybe just theatrical rom-coms are dead. I don't know. Let's wait until Ticket to Paradise to see, because
I think Ticket to Paradise is gonna fucking clean up.
I really hope so. Oh god, it would make me so
good
happy.
Movie, Brooke.
I'm so excited. But I think that it was really interesting to be like, because I feel like the instinct is to be like, it's, you know, it's not that bad. They're always going to make gay movies, which is true. And I think that what you said earlier is very true. Like, this has happened before. It will happen again. It's all good. But also to like look at something kind of similar to Avatar, where it's like, Well, you can't actually chart how over 10 years studios look at the money and take the exact wrong lesson right. from that. And what is it going to mean for this movie?
Yeah.
Is this movie actually as much of like a tipping the scales moment as one, the movie wants us to think it is, and two, as we are kind of thinking about it? Or is it just going to be like, theaters are still weird, the rom-com is weird,
it came out,
moving on,
why did it come out in August? Literally,
so
like,
random.
Throw this in fucking, or sorry, October.
Yeah.
Jesus, what fucking, because it was supposed to come out in August. Make this an early summer movie or something.
This
awful fucking release date.
October is also, like, really not a good month for anything that isn't horror.
A small, like, fucking Oscar-y push that's then going to leapfrog forward.
Like, it's weird. And I think that Billy Eichner and company could have won back some goodwill if they weren't beating the drum as much on the press tour about the importance of this movie, because Fire Island wasn't doing that and just kind of like released quietly with like an openly gay director and like a totally openly gay and primarily Asian American cast and crew writing it behind the scenes, and everyone was like, this movie fucking rocks, and it did really good numbers on Hulu.
It's fun. But also, like, I think that people like this movie is also doing, even though it's maybe not doing box office well, it is like has an A cinema score, and like
it
people
does.
Do like the movie. So it's so interesting just to see all the conversation around it, because it's not like people are like, oh, this movie sucks, it's bad, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. People are like, oh, this is like a fun movie.
Yeah.
However many stars you want to give it. It's so it's not like a disaster.
It's not a disaster.
It's not a calamity.
It also didn't cost that much. It's a
no.
There are no stars in this, and it's a rom-com. It didn't
cost
very much.
Do we know how much did it make? How much was it made for?
I do not know. The budget is listed at $22 million. I think that's really high. Love, Simon, for comparison, was made for, I think, $11
million?
Mm-hmm. $10 million. So, $22
million. Okay, I can see it. I can see it being $22.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we love a mid-budget movie.
We'd love to see it.
So far, and I would just like to point out, it's only been out for one weekend.
Right.
One weekend. It has made $5 million.
Okay. There it was at 4.8 last time
it's
I looked.
It's at 5.3.
Look at that growth.
Right now, I think, so I was looking, just because Love, Simon was, I was like, listen, we've covered this movie on the podcast. It was very recent. It was pitched like being very gay. I wanted to kind of like compare and contrast. Love, Simon made $11 million in its opening weekend.
Okay.
But it was released on 2,300 screens, and Bros was released on 300.
Christ.
So like that's a lot.
That's a big difference.
That's a lot of theaters. And I saw wow, we're just doing a horrible job crediting people this episode. It's fine. I saw something on Twitter where people were like, this is a movie that would have benefited from less theaters, bigger crowds.
Agreed.
As opposed to more theaters, smaller crowds.
Agreed.
So that like it had a chance to spread through word of mouth.
The laughs. Yes.
I just hope that it was like an infectious theater going experience. I just hope that Universal gives this movie half a chance and doesn't immediately like yank it
and throw it to Peacock
because of a bad opening weekend, because movies can have bad opening weekends.
The
and,
Greatest
like,
Showman.
I mean, a classic, you know?
An insane run.
Yeah. I also learned today that Avatar had kind of a bad opening weekend.
Interesting. Okay.
Like comparatively to how much that movie
fucking
cost.
Makes,
it opened to like $75 million and the budget was like $250 million or
James Cameron's soul. Yeah.
Absolutely bananas. So like it's possible for movies to grow.
And even like after that, like The Northman famously like was not a hit in theaters, but has made all of its money back,
on
if not more, on fucking paid video on demand.
Yeah.
So,
well, that could be interesting too, because it's like, oh, is a theatrical rom-com dead? I don't know. So I wonder if when inevitably this gets put on Peacock, if it will do numbers there.
Right.
But I would have never expected The Northman to clean up on PVOD of all places.
No,
like
no.
PVOD is weird.
Yes.
It's I really don't rent movies when they come out, because I think that paying like $9 to rent a movie is egregious.
$19.99 for
I
like
mean
a movie.
That's so egregious.
I hate that. I will
it is
never do that.
Ridiculous. I simply would
it's
never.
The $6.99 ones that bother me, where I'm like, knock it down to like two or three, maybe.
$3.99 is basically my max.
Yeah, no, maybe same. Six, I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, this better be a great movie.
Yeah, although there was something that I was like, oh, I can finally watch. Oh, I think it was Watcher. Watcher is now on like Blu-ray and stuff. And I should watch Watcher.
You should throw. It's good.
Oh, I know. I'm very excited about
good movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so I listen. Sometimes I wait for stuff on PVOD. If I miss it in theaters, I will never really like avoid seeing something. But that's also because I have AMC A-list and I'm a crazy person.
Oh my God, we're crazy.
I know
a lot of
people that just wait and they're like, listen, I'll see it when it's in my living room.
Right. And that's,
and that's fine.
It's also the spectacle thing that we were talking about, like where you go to see Avatar, and yep. Avatar is sort of a capital M movie.
Yeah.
And when you don't have the mid-budget movies and they don't really exist, people mm-hmm. are now accustomed to going to a movie to see something that is a spectacle.
Leads me back to my all rom-coms should be high concept if they're going to be released theatrically idea.
Bang, so, bang.
Bang, bang. You got to watch the Shotgun Wedding trailer.
I will. It's pulled up. I will watch it immediately after this.
Yeah.
And then I will say, good trailer.
Good trailer.
And I'll see it.
Yeah, it's great. I can't wait. It's going to, I don't know if it's theaters, though. I think it's Amazon.
Okay.
Classic. Anyway.
Well, there have been a lot of good rom-coms this year. Like, people are, like, saying the rom-coms in general aren't dead. I just think the rom-coms are figuring out what they're doing.
Yeah, rom-coms are in it.
And theatrical are figuring out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I love seeing movie stars in rom-coms. I love seeing... Yeah. People like basically like cutting their teeth in rom-coms. I hope that this gets Billy Eichner a lot more work. I hope that this,
I think he's pretty fucking good in this movie.
I think he's excellent in this movie.
Like, he shows a lot of emotional depth and nuance, and also like so many people are like, oh, Billy's just so mean the whole time. Like, he's like me, but like
him.
There's growth in this movie.
Yeah,
you know,
also,
like what you see in
more
a
mean
movie?
Characters.
Yeah,
I love mean characters.
We need assholes in cinema.
They're great, and I think that I think that he's very sexy in this movie. I think that the movie in general is like quite sexy in a way that I really like.
What's the line about his hair? There's like a gag
like
about his hair.
So much hair.
See, that's the thing. The joke ratio it goes is you got to have a notepad because I wanted to write some stuff down and I didn't get it.
I know.
But there's a really good gag about his fucking chest hair. It's really funny.
Also, dudes with chest hair. That fits
the Solomon profile.
I mean, the best. But that's also like a weird thing, kind of like hand in hand with like men are too buff on screen where like men like wax everything for like, it was a big deal when Henry Cavill was like, I'm going to have chest hair as Superman.
Like, but guess what?
It's so hot. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Lois
Lane wants to fuck you in a bathtub.
I think body hair is sexy. I'm sorry.
Oh my God, Brooke, how scandalous for you to say.
I know. How dare I? Anyway, that's Bros.
Wow.
And I don't know. Maybe it will have legs. Maybe it won't. But at the end of the day, this isn't the end of the world. Who has
McFarlane.
Legs? Yes, he does. He gets to run through New York City, and we're so happy for him.
Last thing.
Yes.
The song. A lot of people are like dunking on the song in the end.
I am one of those
people.
I can
think you can dunk on the song. However, I think that there is a world in which this should get a nom for best song because of one reason and one reason only, Brooke.
It actually contributes
to the plot of the movie and is not just a fucking song thrown at the end credits just to get an Oscar nom.
Here is my counter argument to that. I really think the song is bad.
What if song, but bad?
I think the lyrics are quite weak. I don't think the melody is very good. And
that would be something that probably Billy would come up with as this person. Like, I don't think he would have a good melody.
Do not.
So therefore, within the context of the movie.
And you think we should reward that at the Academy Awards? I will say, though, I really want this to pull a Big Sick or the White Tiger from like a year ago. And like, I really wanted to get that Best Original Screenplay.
I don't know if that's going to happen, though.
I don't know either. But I would. Did anybody watch the White Tiger? I don't think so.
No.
So.
I mean, I'm actually. Brooke, it was the most watched movie on Netflix.
I was like, the White Tiger got a screenplay nom?
That is
kind
of bananas.
Do I need to watch this movie? So I'm pulling for it. I guess we'll see.
We'll check back out.
It will certainly be on my bracket.
Ooh, I can't wait. Wink, wink, nod, nod for the future.
Wink, wink, nod, nod. Okay, so hey, I'm really glad you brought up the A Cinema score because I had totally forgotten about that. Mm. And I don't think that this movie is getting bad reviews at all.
No.
It's just kind of underperforming. But do you want to see
I would love to see how it's doing on Letterboxd, though.
Letterboxd. Let's check it out.
Can I give a guess, Brooke? I'm going to say a solid 3.2.
Oh, It's 3.6.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Can I just listen? So we all know what the poster looks like. No faces, just hands two guys grabbing each other's butts.
More hands on butts.
Tagline: a romantic comedy that gives you all the feels.
It's not a great tagline.
Logline: two men with commitment problems attempt a relationship. None of those things make me interested in this movie.
I mean, they make me interested, but that's just me.
Conceptually.
Yes.
Conceptually.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was going to go see it.
Right.
Conceptually, I don't think that that's bringing new audiences enough to the table. I don't think that's bringing people that weren't already predisposed to see the movie
to go to the movie into the film. Right, exactly. Like, what is their hook? They're like, okay, sure.
What is the hook?
Yeah.
What is the hook? Other than it's gay, which is a great hook. But again, it's not going to get more people to see a movie.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that. I think this movie is very good. I highly recommend you go see it. If you haven't, I'm sorry if you listened to this episode and you haven't seen it because we spoiled anything. But also,
spoiler
it's a rom-com.
Alert. Yeah. You guess know? What? They get together.
Surprise.
Big kiss.
It's great.
Smooch, smooch.
Smooch, smooch. I did not cry at this movie.
I did cry.
I did not even get a little bit emotional at this movie.
I did.
I know you did. And I just wanted to say that I didn't.
Well, maybe
but
one
I'm
of us
really
related to
did.
Some things and felt a lot of things and was like, yes, love can win in the end. Ugh.
Commitment issues?
No, loneliness issues.
Oh, Jordan. I know. But hey, I love rom-coms.
They're so good.
In general, they're great. Just because I'm in a relationship doesn't mean I don't appreciate the power of falling in
You're
love.
You're like, oh, I'm above love.
I'm above this. I've already got it figured out. No, I fucking love rom-coms. They're the best. I hope to see more of them. Anyway.
I have a question for you, though.
Yes.
Where's this landing on the queer quadrant for you? This is a toughie.
Dude, I literally don't know.
It's a real doozy.
I literally don't know. I literally don't know.
You got to give it
but
something.
But like, okay. So I guess the better question is, if I'm not giving it 5 stars, why?
That's a good question.
And I think that every time I give a movie 5 stars on the QQ, I'm like, I mean, I don't really have a good reason not to. And I don't like to be overly stingy with my 5 stars because, like, what? You're not fulfilling a quota.
I think
you can
to,
do whatever.
Not to, like, use another podcast, but
no, you
the
can.
The Doughboys talk about, like, on when they rate something, they say, like, what is this restaurant doing? And is it, like, excelling at what it's doing? And, like, if we're looking at the queer quadrant, right, these four quadrant movies. This is a four quadrant movie and it is gay. So
yes.
It is kind of doing
it's
everything
doing
it's supposed to be doing that this podcast says it should be doing.
We asked for this movie. We
yes.
asked for a movie that is this.
Right.
And it delivered. So I think I'm going to give it 5 stars.
I think I'm going to give it 5 stars as well.
I don't feel stingy about like not wanting to nitpick
right.
about
just because
stuff.
Maybe it's not the best movie or maybe like you have flaws with it. But what is inherently doing is centering
yeah.
a gay love story in yeah. a four quadrant movie. Cool. Love to see it.
Love
Great.
To see it. And like they got the marketing quality notwithstanding, they got the push, they got
yeah.
the studio release. Like this movie, if we were to put the central thesis of our podcast into like a make a wish to Universal and we were like, please make us something with these parameters, this is what they would give us.
Yes, it
so,
is.
So 5 stars on the QQ.
I'd love to see it.
It is joining the rainbow standard. It's annoying because you're gonna put different.
Yep,
but
okay.
Rainbow standard for bros. Woohoo! I love it.
Wow.
That was bros. good times.
Now, can't wait to get eviscerated online.
Here's the thing, though. I don't see a lot of people hating on the movie in particular. I see some people being like, I didn't fucking like it. But I'm like, yeah I mean, it's a movie.
Sure, yeah.
Like, people
you're
going
to like some
like
movies,
it.
You're going to like some movies, yeah.
I really do feel good about the fact that this movie did perform well at places like TIFF and obviously the cinema score
yeah.
of it all. And also that people are not like, this movie sucks, actually. They're more like, this is annoying.
It's fine, yeah.
It's fine. It's all good. Anyway, that's bros. I'm really
Bro,
glad
we broed out together.
We broed out together. That is that. I am so bad at ending episodes where it's
you're
not the guest
Brooke,
and I don't
Brooke,
get to thank them.
So good at ending episodes. Thank me for being here.
Well, thank you for being here.
Ugh, you're
if
welcome.
If you want more bro shenanigans or talking about the state of cinema in general, you can find us on Twitter. I'm Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant, and we're also on Letterboxd at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And you can find the podcast on Spotify, on Apple, wherever else you care to get your podcasts in Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Oh my god, I didn't even talk about it. Oh my god, we almost went a whole episode. Brooke, this is some of the best Cape Cod representation I've seen on screen in so long.
Yeah, Provincetown is cute. I really like
it. Yeah, it's great. I have been to all of the shops they went into. That fudge store, it's a classic staple.
Yeah, I have also been to all of the stores in Provincetown. I go to Provincetown every time I go to the Cape.
That's a bit much.
When I was there,
why don't you go
to
some other towns? There are some other towns to visit on the Cape.
But none of them are as gay, Jordan. Well, when I was there
this
summer.
That's what you think?
I went twice.
Oh my God, wow.
It was great.
Did you see Ryan Murphy there?
I did not. Probably for the best.
I did like the gag where they're like, you guys are too old for my pool party.
Yeah, it's the Fire Island of Massachusetts.
It is.
It's great.
I would say that Fire Island is the Provincetown of
New York.
Of New York, yeah.
That's kind of, those are fighting words, Jordan.
I think Provincetown came first. Let's be
did
real.
Did it? I guess so.
It did.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I love Provincetown.
Which came
P-Town?
First, the Massachusetts or the New York?
P-Town is great.
P-Town fucking rules.
We
Anyways,
stand P-Town.
I'm happy just because I've said this before. If you're going to fake something, do it well, but this movie doesn't
they just went and
they
shot
spent
in Provincetown.
That money and went on location.
This is
I'm
why
done.
I didn't bring this up, because I knew you were going to be
I'm so happy. I was so happy about
it. I know, but I also can't believe that you like didn't see it coming. I was like, oh, cool, they're going to P-Town. Of course.
I mean, I would have expected a cheat or some bullshit CGI, because I'm so accustomed to it.
Wow, well, so who hurt you?
Auteur Nicholas Stoller.
Yep. So you can drop us a rate if that didn't just, you know, ruin any goodwill we have for the show. Drop us a review. Subscribe if you feel like it. And you can tweet at us and tell us what you think about the Bros Discourse, or actually maybe don't, because like there's plenty of it. But I want to hear it.
Tell us what you thought about it.
Tweet Jordan your thoughts about P-Town instead.
What stores do you like in P-Town? Tell me.
Yes. And let us know what you might like to see us cover in the future.
Brooke, what are we covering in the future though?
Okay. So next week is really like our spooky season going into full effect. We have 3 weeks of horror movies for you. No specific theme this year like we did last year. We're just covering some spooky movies.
I love to see
it. So next year we are kicking it off. Next week we are kicking it off with Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992.
I want to suck your blood.
This is in fact the Gary Oldman, Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder movie. It
oh
is.
Oh my God, it's Dracula.
A wild time. Whoa, dude.
Oh, your fangs.
Whoa.
Ted, I think he's a Dracula.
Is
he Ted?
I don't know. I've never seen Bill and Ted.
Wow, okay.
Okay, but like.
Party on.
Do you think that I would like that movie?
It's a good movie.
Okay, but
it's
like, do you
male,
think I would like
that
movie? It's
male friendship.
Jordan, everything that you're saying is not.
You're not
going to
like that movie. You are not going to like that movie.
But you know what movie I did like?
What?
Bram Stoker's Dracula. So you can tune in next week for that.
And Brooke, do you have anything you would like to leave our listeners with? I know you do.
You know, this podcast is a bit like Gentle if you think about it.